Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you here on Saturday morning. Get you set for tomorrow evening's Jets-Dallas Stars matchup at Bell MTS Place. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Drew, we're obviously starting off with UMBC's upset over Virginia.
Absolutely.
Busted my bracket!
I thought you were heavy on UMBC last night. For those of you who may have missed it, the first time ever, a number 16 seed, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, defeated the University of Virginia last night. Not just defeated them, walloped them by 20 points. Virginia were favorites in the game by 20.5 points and lost by 20 points. So many of you who had Virginia going far in the tournament had their brackets busted as a result of that defeat last night.
Someone made a lot of money out there on that game.
I'm not sure who's betting on UMBC.
I saw one guy bet 800 and won 16 grand.
Well, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what that guy's smoking to begin with to bet $800 on UMBC, but obviously he's a little bit wealthier on this Saturday morning than he was on Friday night. So good for him, good for UMBC, and shame about Virginia embarrassing themselves on a national stage just like that.
That's what's great about that tournament, though, right? Like, I mean, that's why people watch, because you want to see those upsets.
Never happened before.
There's no bigger upset than that one.
There's only been, I think, maybe 4 or 5 2 seeds that have lost to 15 seeds. So this is for the first time ever. History in the making last night with Virginia losing to UMBC. Of course, this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, so we'll get into hockey. I am your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuch. And gentlemen, the Jets came back home after their season-long 6-game road trip on Thursday night to meet the Chicago Blackhawks. And it certainly did not start off promising as the Blackhawks scored that controversial goal 11 seconds into the game.
I don't even know if it was controversial. It was just confusing.
Confusing's a good word for it.
And, you know, I remember 2 nights ago, you know, I turn over to Dave and I'm like, didn't the referee say no goal? And then I look over to the right and I look at Josh Green and we're both scratching our heads because on the replay, which was, by the way, one of the worst angles I've ever seen of an offside. We got the blimp view up in the press box. It looked like it was going to be no goal, but then the puck is dropped, and then they're announcing the goal. Then, you know, the Jets are trying to tie the game up, which they obviously did not too long after with Paul Stastny getting that first goal, and then, you know, the route was on there. But very confusing. Looked like it was offside, and it sounded like the referee, I forget who the referee was, but it sounded like he said offside, but obviously, offside is the new onside.
Yeah, no, that was a very... And, you know, my dad was in the crowd. I was talking to him after the game, and he said that he thought he had heard that the ref had said offside. After the fact, you and I thought maybe he said onside, and that, you know, and we heard them announcing the penalty, and Jack Roswick was in the penalty box. So it was very confusing, and so much so that we tweeted no goal, the Jets tweeted no goal, like everybody was on the no goal camp, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, 11 seconds in, Jets are killing a five, you know, have a 5-on-4 for Chicago, and the Jets are down 1-0.
So, I don't know about you guys, but I thought Andrew Kopp's first period goal was a big one.
That's funny, Ezzy. Obviously, that was Joel Armia getting the goal. It proved to be the 2-1 goal, and the Jets, obviously, the route was on at that point in time, with the Jets winning by a 5, or leading after the first period by a 5-1 margin. It just sort of came out of nowhere. I mean, you know, Anton Forsberg looks shaky on that Paul Stastny goal, to put it mildly.
How many times has Anton Forsberg been pulled this year?
6.
There you go. I thought it was more than that. I was going to say 12.
You had that right at your fingertips there, Dave.
I just remember one of the Chicago guys had tweeted it.
So. Yeah. Well, and he obviously didn't have anything to provide the Blackhawks in net. And the Jets, to the credit, took advantage. And really, the game was over after 20 minutes. It would have been, the score would have been more dramatic if not for some impressive saves by J.F. Berube in the second and third period. But it was sort of a bizarre game in that it's 5-1, crowds loving it, and then the second and third periods might as well not have happened. because the Blackhawks, I mean, they got to 5-2, and then Kyle Connor scores into the empty net to make it 6-2. But, you know, after that, the final 40 minutes of the game were relatively inconsequential.
Yeah, absolutely. The game's over after the first period with the Jets up 5-1. And what I liked about that first period for the Jets, obviously, you know, the early goal, you know, sucks. You give up that goal 11 seconds in to Brandon Saad. But I like the fact that you had five different goal scorers. I like how you got all of the goals at even strength, so you're not relying on your power play there. And, you know, some players that have been struggling to score, Dave, are putting the puck in the net. Brian Little had gone, you know, almost a month without a goal, and, you know, it was a nice goal that he scored. He almost scored another goal later in the game, and Jack Roslovic, you know, he was struggling a little bit to create offensively. So you like the fact that you got some goals from other sources other than the Stastny Ehlers Line A line, right? And obviously, you know, Line A's point streak continues with that beautiful secondary assist that he gets on Stastny's goal. But, I mean, the Jets just, you know, they continued to bring it, you know, after they went up a couple of goals. And, you know, the Jets needed that win. Not only, you know, were the Jets trying to prove something by beating the Blackhawks because Chicago had defeated them twice earlier, I think they wanted to end that losing streak, right? They lose the last three games of that road trip, and they wanted to, you know, get that good feeling back in the dressing room. So a really impressive first period. And, you know, you also have to give Connor Hellebuyck credit, you know, even in a game where, you know, he doesn't necessarily, you know, have to, you know, have a big impact on the game because the Jets go up by four goals. I thought he was really solid in net for them.
Well, I mean, if the Blackhawks, I mean, they score 11 seconds into the game, and then the Blackhawks get the two-minute power play as a result of the failed offside challenge. So, you know, the Jets, you know, you sort of start the game expecting it to be a little bit, you know, you can ease into the game. That wasn't available for the Jets, obviously. The Blackhawks came out pretty quickly, and then they had the power play. So they very easily could have been 2-0 for the Blackhawks before the game was even, you know, 2.5 minutes over. The Jets don't give up anything on the power play, and then they immediately sort of snap into performance. And this was the easy, on the six-game homestand, this is the only game, really, that's going to be against a team that's completely out of the playoff race. So the Jets were, you know, they wanted to take advantage of their weaker opponent, albeit, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks and the aura that still surrounds that team, and they were able to do so. And that's what the Jets probably like about it. And to your point, Ezzy, I think they definitely like the fact that they were able to get some balanced goal scoring from some guys who hadn't been scoring for a while. I mean, Patrick Laine doesn't get on the goals as a goal scorer, but he certainly gets on for the assist, and he gets on all the highlight reels for the double toe drag. I mean, that's just a player right now who's playing with the utmost of confidence. If you're pulling that off at your own blue line and you're pulling it off successfully and it ends up in a goal in the opposition net, that's a pretty impressive play by number 29 for the Jets.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, Patrick Laine had some scoring chances in that game, but, you know, we also have to talk about how big of a story it was that Jacob Trouba comes back into the lineup, and we didn't know if Paul Stastny was going to play in that game, right? So, I mean, Jacob Trouba makes an immediate impact, you know, picks up a couple of assists, but, you know, for me, the most important thing about Jacob Trouba coming back is that it allows Dustin Byfuglien to play less, and it just brings back one of your top defensemen, you know, paired up with Josh Morrissey. That's your top shutdown pair, so, you know, again, it was a very impressive game for the Jets, and you want to start this homestand outright. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, the games are going to get tougher here. A very desperate Dallas team is coming into Winnipeg tomorrow night, and Dallas is battling, you know, with Minnesota, and they're battling with Colorado for those last couple of playoff spots here. And then you've got some tough games coming up next week against teams like Anaheim and LA, and then you've got Nashville later on. So
team after desperate team coming into Bell MTS Place. And your point, Ezzy, about Dallas, I mean, Ottawa defeats Dallas last night, so the Stars are currently tied with the Colorado Avalanche and the Anaheim Ducks for the final playoff spots in the Western Conference, and we'll talk about the playoff races a little bit later on in the show. But this is a Dallas team that the Jets have had immense success against so far, and it's quite possible, I guess we'll know more after the Jets practice this morning, that you could see Adam Lowry or you could see Mark Scheifele return to the Jets lineup. So what you're seeing is a Jets team tomorrow possibly getting even healthier against an opponent that they've been able to handle quite easily this season.
Well, and I think also the added depth will prove useful in the sense that you're not going to have to run your bench as hard, and you won't have to run your top lines as hard. And so the reality is you can really spread it out. And we saw that towards the end of the Chicago game, where the third and fourth lines were were playing a lot more than the first and second, in the sense that you just really didn't need to take a chance. You don't want it. This is the whole point of the season, is when you've got a game in hand like that, you don't obviously take them out of the game entirely, but at the same time, you don't need to run them down. Let the Brandon Tanevs play as much as they can, because the fact is, you just don't want to take a chance and get a guy injured at a game when you're already up 5-1. So Mark Scheifele coming back into lineup, that's going to be huge for the Jets. Adam Lowry coming back in after missing so many games, that's going to be big. And again, like I said, you want to ease those guys in. Like, Jacob Trouba played 14 minutes, I believe, in that Chicago game. Now, that's obviously not what Jacob Trouba is going to be normally playing throughout the season, but easing him back in, that's a luxury that Paul Maurice had, because he didn't need to worry and rely on Jacob Trouba significantly in that game. But the fact is, as he said, he had an immediate impact, had two assists, I believe, and so he played a really solid game. But again, I think to the point of just allowing your guys to, that you have the luxury night right now where the Jets are essentially locked into that two spot, that you want to obviously maintain wins and try and win every game. But the fact is, more important than that is ensuring that your bench is going to be healthy for the playoff run. So to me, you know, ensuring your guys are healthy, ensuring your guys are getting rested up for that, what we all know is to be an extreme grind where the hockey takes that next step to the higher level, you have to ensure that you have a healthy bench. And so to me, that's the most important thing right now for down the stretch.
Yeah, I would agree with basically pretty much everything you said there, Dave. The Jets are, as you said, they've pretty much locked into that second spot in the Western Conference, and we'll talk about, you know, I think next segment we'll talk
Central.
About, pardon me, in the Central Division, Western Conference. They're actually battling for Vegas now. Vegas in a bit of a tailspin. They're 4-5-1 in their last 10, lost two in a row. So Vegas is just only a point ahead of the Jets for second place overall in the conference, for whatever that is worth. Obviously nothing in terms of a trophy or anything.
Yeah, and you know, when you're talking about, you know, what the Jets are playing for right now, I think they're playing for a lot, and I think it's actually a good thing that they're locked into second spot. I mean, what's the alternative? You're battling with Dallas and Minnesota and Colorado for a wild card spot, right? So, you know, the Jets are in a great position right now. Are they going to catch Nashville? No, because Nashville doesn't lose.
Yeah.
Right? So Nashville's going to win the Central, but, I mean, these games coming up here, don't you want to be playing games that are of importance right now in the season, right? Like, you're going to be playing a very desperate Dallas team, followed by a very desperate LA team and a very desperate Ducks team. Mm-hmm. I mean, these three teams do not have the luxury that the Jets have right now, and it's kind of the opposite of what we saw back in 2015 when the Jets were battling for a wild card spot. So I think we're going to see some really good hockey here coming up over the next couple of weeks. And, you know, the Jets are going to have an opportunity to rest some players. I don't think it's going to happen, you know, in the next week or so. But I think as the season progresses and, you know, we get later into this homestand, you know, that's certainly an option.
Well, to that point, Ezzy, that's what I want to talk about next segment. So when we come back, we'll go through the Jets injury update, as we know that their walking list of wounded continues to grow in some cases and get healthier in others. And I want to talk about that question about rest, because we know that the Predators have been doing that. They've been resting players. Is this something the Jets should start to consider as we enter the last 2-3 weeks of the regular season? That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Back the other way, great toe drag there by Line A, near side for Ehlers across the line, into where the slot, now down low, and a shot, they score! Paul Stastny from the goal line again beats Forsberg, and we're tied at one.
Paul Stastny with the goal for the Winnipeg Jets on Thursday night against the Blackhawks. Paulie Edmonds with the call here on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Paul Stastny getting the opening goal for the Jets on Thursday night certainly was in question if he was going to be playing after what happened during the warm-up on Tuesday in Nashville. Fortunately for the Jets, obviously, it was not a serious injury, just a precaution, I think, more than anything by the Winnipeg Jets in keeping Paul Stastny out of Thursday's game. But the Jets are getting healthier in some regards. We saw, you know, Stastny return, Jacob Trouba return, Lowry and Scheifele will know more after today's practice. As Paul Maurice said earlier the week, we expect full contact on Saturday on Saturday's practice, and then we'll make a decision on where they're at and how they are feeling for the next night. Steve Mason, he obviously had his knee scoped. He's out for a couple of weeks. Michael Hutchinson, it was a concussion, so he's out of the lineup indefinitely. Matt Hendricks, he's out 6 to 8 weeks. And Dmitry Kulikov, this is the one I want to start with. Dmitry Kulikov, who's been sort of just very solid for the Winnipeg Jets on the left side of the defense this year. Not flashy, just solid. Very much up in the air as to what his injury is. Sounds like this one might be one that impacts the Jets into the playoffs.
Yeah, and, you know, we don't really know, I mean, how long it's going to be right now. So, you know, it could end up being a couple weeks. Hopefully it's not going to be 3 or 4 weeks, because then you start to get closer to the playoffs, right? The playoffs start in, you know, just over 3 weeks. So, you know, you hope that Kulikov is back in the lineup right now, guys. But, you know, the interesting ones are obviously Adam Lowry and Mark Scheifele, right? And we haven't seen what you think the Jets 1 through 4 centers are going to be yet. You mm-hmm. expect it to be Mark Scheifele, Brian Little, Paul Stastny, Adam Lowry up the middle, 1 through 4, right? And we haven't seen that yet. So, you know, right now, Dave, it looks like there's a pretty good chance at least one of those two players comes back into the lineup. But, you know, you talk about, you know, Dmitry Kulikov, Toby Enstrom, he's resting. But I think, you know, in years past, you see teams rest players with 3 or 4 games left in the season. What's really interesting about what Peter Laviolette and the Nashville Predators are doing right now is that you're doing it with 4 weeks left in the season, mm-hmm. not 4 games left in the season, right? And so you wonder if Paul Maurice, you know, knowing, and the Jets, you know, management and coaching staff, knowing that second place in the Central Division is locked up, you wonder if, you know, they let Toby Enstrom, you know, miss a couple more games, knowing that, you know, okay, it gives an opportunity for a guy like Joe Morrow to get some more playing time. It gives a guy like Ben Sherratt, who I think has probably been the most underrated defenseman for the Jets, in my opinion, this year. And it's not just his point streak, Drew. I think Ben Sherratt's physical game has been very effective for the Jets. He's been a very solid defenseman for them this year. So when you're talking about, you know, some of the more injured bodies, of course, you want to get Steve Mason back into the lineup, because that's your backup goalie going into the playoffs. With all due respect to Eric Comrie, you want Eric Comrie to be one of your top goalies for the Manitoba Moose alongside Michael Hutchinson. So, you know, Mark Scheifele, you want him to start getting games in. You want Adam Lowry to start getting games in. I mean, guys, Lowry has missed a lot of hockey this mm-hmm. year. And, you know, the type of hockey that he plays, I mean, you want him to start banging some bodies around out there, right? So, you know, if he's able to come back tomorrow night, that's huge, but we know that he's going to come back, you know, sooner rather than later. If it's not Sunday, it's going to be Tuesday. But you know, it's good news. The Jets have had a terrible run of injuries here, you know, maybe not as bad as last year with the long-term injuries to Little and Myers, Dave, but you know, a lot of injured bodies out of the lineup on that road trip, and you know, it's nice to see them getting healthier.
I think the advantage this year versus last year is that also that they're lost forwards, where they have more depth this year. And so they're able to kind of offset that by having new guys come into the lineup and playing well, like a Jack Roslovic, who comes from the Moose and kind of really doesn't seem to miss a beat. And so I think that's a luxury they've had, like, as opposed to last year, where it was pretty primarily a lot of their defense was going down, and they had a guy like Nelson Nogé, a first-year professional, going into the lineup and playing. So that was somewhat unexpected. And I think that as a result, they were able to kind of handle it a little bit better than they were able to last year. So I think it's really good. And to the point of the idea of resting players, I think it's a very interesting concept. I think it's sometimes a little bit hard to rein these guys in because they're so in the mode. But I think from the perspective of Peter Laviolette doing it with Nashville, I mean, he's obviously doing it based on what kind of impact the Stanley Cup run had on his team.
Yep.
And he has an intimate knowledge now, knowing what that process, that lengthy, you know, number of games into the summer essentially can do to your team. So I think he's probably thinking about it from the long-term perspective, which is wise, because he's not allowing his guys to go big stretches of time without playing, so they're not going to be super rusty, mm-hmm. but he's giving them an opportunity to rest their bodies. And, you know, they talked about it yesterday or the other day with Paul Maurice, talking about, I think Jeff Hamilton was asking about guys nursing injuries, and you know, they don't become disclosed until after the season ends. We hear they played with broken bones, they played with this, they played with that, mm-hmm. and the reality is all of these guys are nursing something. Like, every single player is, like, could probably be listed as not healthy.
Yeah.
Because hockey is the kind of game that just lends itself to that sort of punishment of your body. So the truth is, all of these guys go into the playoffs hurting, But they don't care because the fact is they all want to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So now they'll ramp up their game and that's what they're going to do. What Laviolette, I think, is doing smartly is he's allowing them to go in healthier than they would be if they were having to tear it up and fight tooth and nail to get into the playoffs.
You've earned the right to be able to rest guys by their performance through the first 70 games of the season. And so you look at the Jets and the guys who've played the entire season, all 71 games. Wheeler, Laine, and Ehlers, Little, Myers, Morrissey, and Kopp all have played every game this year. They haven't missed a game.
Okay.
If I'm Paul Maurice, I'm at this stage in the season looking where we are in the standings. I'm strategically looking at resting those guys for various games. Not all of them for, you know, at the same time, obviously. But much like Laviolette is doing with the Predators and their group of forwards, is I'm looking at resting some of those guys and giving them a night off here, a night off there, where maybe it stretches, you know, a guy can go 3 or 4 days between games. You know, so it's almost like a miniature bye week, depending on how the schedule lines up. Because, the schedule, they have one back-to-back left, and I think it's Montreal and Ottawa, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'll actually be at those games.
There you go. Are you going to both games?
Yep.
Oh, okay. There you go. Ezzy live on location for us in Ottawa and Montreal for the Jets and the Habs and the Jets and the Senators.
And I think, Drew, a lot of it has to do with the player. And as you mentioned, and as Dave mentioned, it has to do with what games we're talking about in relation to the end of the season, right? So I don't think you're going to see any Jets rested here against Dallas or LA or Anaheim, maybe later on in this homestand. But as you mentioned, I think the last 3 or 4 games of the season, and it also depends, you know, I mean, let's be honest here. Patrick Laine is going for 50 goals. Does he want to take a night off?
The other thing also to factor in, I think, is the fact that they haven't clinched anything yet. So the truth is, if you ask Paul Maurice, he's not going to say, well, we're locked into the second spot. We're future casting. But the truth is, until they've actually secured a playoff spot, until they've actually pretty much locked themselves into that second hole, I think that they'll continue to play, like as he just said, they'll continue to play their guys. And then the thing about the other advantage is that you don't know what's going to happen. A guy could get injured. Who knows who he is? But the fact is, you want your guy. You have to want to rely on a Sean Matthias coming in or someone, or Nick Patan. Well, Nick Patan's playing with the Moose. But I'm saying that someone, you want to give some guys that opportunity to get some game action in, not just be thrown into the mix first game of the playoffs or something like that.
Well, I agreed. And that's why I'm thinking you give a guy like Sean Matthias maybe an increased role at some point in the next, you know, in the next 11 games. Or you give a guy like Marco Dano maybe an increased role at some point in the next 11 games. And you sit down a guy like Brian Little, or you sit down a guy like Blake Wheeler, who's certainly given you everything they can give you for the first 71 games of the season. And in fact, the way I would do it, you know, so often you wait until they're clinched or, you know, and then you sit a guy for the last game of the regular season. I'd rather have what I am going to describe as my ideal playoff roster for the final game of the season, giving them an opportunity to play together in what might be a meaningless game, and maybe sit a guy, you know, a few games before that. Maybe sit a guy as they head out east to that Montreal and Toronto and Ottawa series.
Right.
Just so that when the last couple games of the season, I think there's two-game homestand to finish the year, if I'm not mistaken, against Chicago and Calgary.
Yep.
Maybe you have your ideal playoff lineup for those two games, so these guys are gelling and they've played a little bit together before the postseason starts, and you rest them in the games before that. In the 9 games before those final 2 games, you strategically rest guys.
I think there's a good chance that that happens, and it makes a lot of sense for many of the reasons that you just outlined, Drew, and Nashville's already been doing it here, so it doesn't make a lot of sense to necessarily play, you know, some of the veteran players like Blake Wheeler, Brian Little. Maybe you give Dustin Byfuglien, you know, a night off against the Ottawa Senators, something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to see any members of the Jets, you know, take off 2 or 3 or 4 games, and I don't think it's going to happen early on in this homestand, and it might not happen at all on this homestand. Maybe it happens when they go on the road, like you mentioned, against Chicago or Toronto or those back-to-back games. But it makes a lot of sense considering that you've already got second place locked up, and you know, you just give some players rest, and they're hopefully going to benefit from that as far as being fresher when they come back into the lineup and heading into the playoffs.
Where do you use Eric Comrie? We know that Paul Maurice spoke about using Comrie maybe 3 or 4 times, as many as 3 or 4 times in the next 11 games. You know, where do you see Comrie fitting in at this point for the Jets? I mean, you know, Hellebuck has played so much hockey. We know that he's a guy who certainly could probably use a rest.
Maybe you see him tomorrow night.
It wouldn't surprise me. Or you see him, I mean, like you mentioned, the Ottawa-Montreal, you see Comrie, I would assume, in one of those games for sure.
I think you'll see him, Dave, once in the next 3 games here.
wouldn't surprise me if, you know, if when the when Nashville comes to town, which is not this week, I believe it's is it a week from Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken?
Well, the way Hellebuck played against Nashville last game, I mean, Hellebuck is most likely playing that game.
Nashville's playing on the Sunday.
A week Sunday. It wouldn't surprise me, Ezzy, to see UC Saros against Eric Comrie. Both coaches have nothing to play for in that game, really. You're likely gonna face each other in the second round of the playoffs. You've proved all your points in the regular season between these two teams.
Yeah, it could happen.
You almost maybe take a step back. You take some of the gasoline off the fire for what is really more or less a relatively meaningless game between the two top teams in the Central Division, and you go with your backup goalies in that game, and maybe you rest guys in that game as both coaches want to keep their powder dry for the playoffs.
It might be meaningless in terms of the standings, but I still think the Jets want to win that game.
Look, of course they want to, but
they've lost so many games to the Predators this year.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, so you lost the game last Tuesday, and that was a back-to-back situation. We know all the reasons why the Jets lost that game. And then you look at the 6-5 game at home a couple weeks before that, right after the trade deadline. That was a fantastic hockey game, probably the best game we've seen of the year. Earlier in the season, way back, the Jets beat the Predators in Nashville. I think that was back in October, if I'm not mistaken, or November on a road trip. I don't remember exactly. I'm just saying that, you know, at this point in time, I don't know how much you have to prove against the Predators before it counts for the really counts in the playoffs.
That's all speculation at this point.
It always is. That's what we do.
Well, I mean, especially when it comes to
not me, I'm straight facts.
Straight facts?
Yep.
Straight facts, Dave Minuk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Die Hard 2. Just the facts.
Was that the tagline for Die Hard 2?
No, one line. He had one line in the airport where he said, the lady asked him a question. He said, just the facts. Sorry, what were you saying?
I was going to say, one thing is certain, that we're not going to see Connor Hellebuck start all five of these next home games.
Right.
Eric Comrie is going to play one of these games. So if it's not going to be against Dallas or LA or Anaheim, sure, it could be Nashville.
We will find out when we come back. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you here in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook and Instagram. Just look for Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Jets and Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Jason Bell. You know Jason, of course, with his work from the Winnipeg Free Press covering the Winnipeg Jets. You also know him as Chase in the infamous Dump and Chase column with his colleague Mike McIntyre. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep that identity a secret. I think you've just blown my cover. We had a big fight to see who would be Chase and who would be Dump, and I won.
Well, my apologies, Peter Parker. I'll keep your identity a secret going forward. Jason obviously brought you on for some Jets talk as we sit here on a Saturday morning. And I don't know if you happened to hear the previous segment, but we were talking about resting some of the Jets players, particularly the guys who've logged big minutes and who've played, you know, most every game for the Winnipeg Jets this season. You know, the Tyler Myers, the Blake Wheeler, the Brian Little, the Dustin Byfuglien's. What are your thoughts on Paul Maurice maybe sitting down some of his veteran guys for a game here, a game there over the final 3 weeks of the season, as it does look like more, you know, the Jets, well, not mathematically locked up, but it does seem like the Jets are more than likely going to finish second in the Central Division.
Well, I certainly see some merit to it, and you guys covered it off pretty extensively as I was driving to the rink here for practice this morning. But, you know, you've got some guys that have played all 71, I believe it is now, and which is pretty astounding that any of these group have actually played a full season with the way that they've been going down with injuries over the last year or two. I mean, but Blake Wheeler's only missed five games in his career as a Winnipeg Jet, which again is pretty astounding. But, you know, they're not going to sit these guys for two or three games in a row as suggested. I mean, I think Paul Maurice is going to pick his spots. He's probably going to look at the rosters of teams he's playing. He's going to look at situations on what bodies he has at his disposal, and we can only assume that he's going to have a few more over the course of the next two or three days, and he's accustomed to if Scheifele and Lowry indeed come back. You know, he wants to make sure that these guys are in a bit of a rhythm going moving forward into the postseason, and as as suggested, I think, you know, the last couple of games of the season, you're probably going to see as close to a final roster as not unlike what you'd see at, coming out of a training camp or those last couple of games of the preseason. You want to see as close to your roster as you're going to go to, because you want these guys primed and ready for their opposition. But boy, it'd be a wise move to give some of those tired, worn-out bodies a bit of a break down this stretch when, as you suggest, some of these games will become not necessarily, you know, meaningless, but certainly won't have the type of impact that they did during that 2014-2015 run when every single outing was so critical for this team.
Jason, it was quite the first period Thursday night. You had the Brandon Saad non-goal goal 11 seconds into the game, and then you had five Jets goals coming from five different players. The goal that Brian Little scored, did he need that goal maybe more than any other Jet?
You know, he struggled to find the touch lately. I'm trying to remember the exact numbers. Was that was his first in 12, I believe, or he had gone 11 without. And, you know, he's obviously been pressing. They kind of switched things around with that center iceman, obviously, when Paul Stastny came aboard. And, you know, Brian Little, we've always said that he's a guy that is able to play with almost anybody. He's kind of those plug-and-play centers. And, you know, he had the great years with Wheeler and Andrew Ladd. But for some reason, Brian Little has not had great chemistry with the two young European wingers. And so now he's kind of slotted into more of a kind of a third line center or a 2A, 2B center with Paul Stastny. And, you know, he's certainly created more over the course of the last 10 days or so than I think we've seen him over the course of maybe the last month or so. And you're right. I mean, there's probably a huge sigh of relief for him that the puck, it used to be the Brian Little, that the puck would follow Brian Little around. And, you know, you'd always think, why is this guy not scoring 30 like he did when he first broke into the league with Atlanta? And, you know, he probably missed more chances than he scored on. And that would certainly have been the case the last few weeks. But good on him to get one, and good on for the club, because, you know, so much onus of scoring had gone on number 29, Patrick Laine, and they were able to spread it around a bit the other day.
Jason, you wrote today in the Free Press about perusing the Jets' potential playoff partners. And having taken a look at all three of those teams, which one do you think the Jets best match up with?
Well, the way that it sits right now, I don't think anything changed last night. I know that Dallas, again, probably squandered a point and only settled for one, and Colorado lost. And so the Minnesota Wild are probably the matchup that looks to be right now, and that's the one that I like the best. The Winnipeg Jets are going to advance forward and play, as we believe, they'll play the Nashville Predators. I like the way that the Jets match up against Minnesota. Minnesota, you know, they haven't been a tremendously successful hockey club, but scoring a whole lot of goals this year. They're getting great production, obviously, out of a veteran like Eric Staal. And as I pointed out, and this is no great secret, I mean, there's a couple of guys like Niederreiter and Parise. They've got some skill, but I really like the way that the Jets go at Minnesota. I'm a little more wary of them playing a Dallas team, although, again, Dallas has squandered these points lately, and they may not even sneak in. If they're going to do it, they're going to maybe do it through the back door. But that's the team that I think the Jets would maybe have the most trouble with. Dallas, even though that they swept them this year, for me, a matchup against Minnesota and the geographical nature of this and fans going in and the heightened excitement of that series would certainly be a good one.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, you know, he sort of goes under the radar a little bit with his performance on the Jets' blue line. That's Dmitry Kulikov. He's out of the lineup now with sort of what's been described as an upper body injury. The Jets haven't really been able to get a good grasp on what's ailing him, as apparently there's a lot of swelling and inflammation. If he's out of the lineup long term, how significant of a loss is this for the Jets?
Well, he's certainly had, as you suggested, a fairly solid, not necessarily a spectacular season. I don't think he hasn't put up huge offensive numbers. And for a guy that I thought had been billed as a real sort of heavy hitter, an open ice guy, we haven't seen a whole lot of that. He hasn't made a whole lot of huge glaring mistakes, although there have been some. And, you know, he's been, at times he and Tyler Meyer have made some plays that I know Winnipeg Jets fans wouldn't be all that thrilled with, but it would certainly be a setback. Having said that, and you pointed out to the consistent play of Ben Sherratt, and, you know, he's he was a little bit of a forgotten man earlier in the season when, you know, Kulikov came in and Tucker Pullman was sort of the brand new shiny toy. I think some of us wrote about, and the Jets were very high on him. Ben Chiarot was the odd man out, but you'd be hard pressed to look at Ben Chiarot's game and think that they're taking a huge step backwards with him instead of Kulikov in. He doesn't do anything ridiculously flashy, although he's got a bit of a point streak going right now, and he scored a couple of goals the other day, or a big goal the other day. But, you know, he doesn't have those boneheaded plays where Jet fans throw their head back and go, geez, I look like a lot like Mark Stewart out there. And, you know, he doesn't do those. He just sort of goes about his business, and he does add a physical element back there that is certainly a huge aid to the organization. So, you know, having said that, yeah, that's the one that we've been kind of sitting on waiting, because it's been kind of hush-hush about that one, and it was kind of a weird one to begin with. And you just, you know, I'm guessing, because they really don't tell us what it is, but is it the recurrence of that bad back that gave him all kinds of problems in Buffalo, or is it something else? And, you know, I don't know if we're going to learn more today. We're certainly going to learn more about Scheifele and Adam Lowry today, I think, and possibly the goaltender situation. But I don't know if we're going to get much information on Kulikov today.
You know, Jason, you just mentioned Mark Scheifele and Adam Lowry, and everyone is patiently waiting to find out if they're going to play tomorrow night versus Dallas. If Lowry does come back into the lineup Sunday, or when he does come back into the lineup, if it's not Sunday, it's most likely going to be Tuesday, do you see him centering that fourth line between Joel Armia and Brandon Tanev? How do you see, you know, him being used here down the stretch heading into the playoffs?
Well, I don't know. Every decision I make as far as the way this roster should shake down, I'm like a 0 for 100 this year, so including how they rotate goaltenders. So, you know, I can't get into Paul Maurice's head. You know, they had so much great success with Lowry up the middle between Armia and Kopp, but that was, again, when you had a healthy Matt Hendricks. And, of course, Matt Hendricks is probably lost for what the remainder of the season. So that does create an opening in the fourth line. So I'm not sure. Do they break up Lowry and Kopp, and as you suggested, and maybe leave a line on the third line that's been playing pretty well lately, and drop Lowry down to the fourth line, ease him in, not unlike what they did with Jacob Trouba the other night. You know, I mean, Adam Lowry's not going to play 25 minutes tomorrow night, so I'm not going to guess, but all I'm going to say is that the coaching staff and the players will be happy to have number 17 back in the lineup, because it's been an awfully long time, and he returned after one injury and was gone after a couple of games. And, you know, they've never really solidified up the middle what this club can look like, especially when Paul Stastny was just added. So as you suggested earlier, this would be maybe the first weekend or early next week where Winnipeg Jet fans are going to actually see what they have as far as their middleman.
Jason, Cal Connor has the third most goals on the Jets. He's second in rookie goal scoring. It seems to be the quietest story probably on the Jets roster right now, the fact that he hit 25 goals the other night against the Hawks. Just how impressive has his season been for Winnipeg?
Well, you know what? You can point to the goals, obviously, as very impressive for a young kid coming out of college. But you know, he's sort of done that all his life, right? He scores goals, and he you know, puck follows him around. We sort of knew that, and we saw some of that in early in training camp, and you know, he won a job out of it in his rookie season. So that, you know, 25 goals is impressive and a little bit surprising. But I think for more purists would take a look at Kyle Connor and say, boy, what we didn't see last year was that sort of, you know, the hunting of the puck, the getting into corners, being on the right side of the puck, you know, the back check, and doing some of the hard jobs that are often tough on a young player to grasp early in his career. And I think, you know, most people watching the Jets, whether you're a diehard Jet fan or just somebody that doesn't watch the team all that regularly, you have to like the way that this kid has taken up the defensive role and has checked, and then the goals have sort of come. He's exactly the way that Paul Maurice has always talked about this club, right? And, you know, if you do all the little things right, the goals will come. Or with Kyle Connor, that's really what's happened. I mean, you know, the way that he pursues the puck, I think, is pretty impressive for a young guy that's still, you know, he's still pretty slight. When you've all stood next to him, and he's still pretty slight. He's not going to you know, knock guys off the puck, but boy, he's battled certainly more than I would have given him credit for or thought that he could earlier in the year. So to me, it's a long story to get to the point where, for me, that's what's impressed me most about Kyle Connor, is his ability to compete.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. He's on his way to practice, where we'll be getting more of an injury update from Jets head coach Paul Maurice, and we'll see who's on the ice in both non-contact and regular jerseys for the Jets. Jason, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Take care, guys.
Take care, Jason. When we come back, we're going to discuss Dustin Byfuglien. Is he being unfairly maligned for some of his performance as of late? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Wheeler takes it wide over the middle, and a diving play by Backstrom to break it up. Byfuglien trying to hold it in. Can't. Kuznetsov is in alone. Kuznetsov scores! Yevgeny Kuznetsov with his 21st of the year. And the Washington Capitals will win it in overtime.
Dennis Bayak with the call from Monday night's Jets-Washington Capitals game. A game the Capitals won 3-2 in overtime. That goal where Dustin Byfuglien goes in for the pinch on Evgeny Kuznetsov, isn't able to make the plays, caused a great deal of consternation among Winnipeg Jets fans. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Dustin Byfuglien, maybe it's an ill-advised pinch. We can debate that as well, but he's certainly getting a lot of criticism from Jets Nation as a result of that play. Scott Campbell in the Winnipeg Free Press wrote about it, saying he thinks the critics of Dustin Byfuglien are being a little too rough on him this season. Your thoughts? Is Dustin Byfuglien unfairly maligned for some of his actions on the ice by a segment of Jets fans?
He might be, but I try to stay away from, you know, the Jets Twitter and all of this criticism. I mean, and let's be honest here. For the last 7 years, Dustin Byfuglien has been one of the Jets' most relied upon and important players. And he's certainly one of the Jets' best defensemen. Is he the Jets' best defenseman? No, I think Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba are the Jets' two best defensemen, and that's your shutdown pair. But I mentioned this on last week's show, Drew, and you were away, but we talked about, you know, how much Dustin Byfuglien has been playing. And then he goes out and he plays 27 minutes against Philadelphia, and then he ends up playing over 30 minutes, almost 31 minutes, against the Washington Capitals. And, Dave, that game, of course, went to overtime. But still, I mean, he's playing half of the game there, and the last couple of games he's been right around 26 minutes. I think he was around 25-49 against the Chicago Blackhawks. So I've said all along, I'm not saying that Dustin Byfuglien can't play 27, 28 minutes a game, or that he doesn't want to play that much. I just think he's more effective if he's playing 22 minutes a game, or maybe let's go up to 23 or 24 minutes. But I think when you start getting up to 27 or 28, I just think he's less effective. And I think especially when you're heading into the playoffs here, guys, we've got 10 games left. I think you want him to rest a little bit more. Now, Jacob Trouba's back in the lineup, so Dustin Byfuglien's minutes will go down a little bit. I bet, you know, they'll go down closer to 23 minutes or 24 minutes. But to get back to your point, I mean, fans are going to criticize players. That's what fans do. I don't know if Scott Campbell is referring to fans when he's talking about, you know, Dustin Byfuglien being criticized. I mean, I think we make observations about Buff. I mean, I think he's still one of the best players on the Jets. I love Buff. I mean, his physicality and his playmaking ability, he's a very unique player. Does he make mistakes? Of course he makes mistakes. We all make mistakes. I'm going to make a mistake later on in the show.
You're going to make a mistake probably sooner than that even.
Does he get criticized more than other players? Maybe he does. I have no idea, Drew. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is the amount of minutes he's been playing, he was a point-a-game player while Jacob Trouba was out of the lineup, right? So if you know, everyone's getting on him for the mistake he made in that Washington game, well, get a life. I mean, he's going to make mistakes. He's also been one of the Jets' most relied-upon defenders over the last month and a half with Trouba out of the lineup. So, you know, he makes one mistake. Okay, he made one bad mistake. He's still a great player. Let's move on.
You know what surprises me the most about it is not that he's criticized. It's that people criticize players for mistakes made in three-on-three hockey, which is such a gimmick, and it's not really – it's not a fair comparison to an actual five-on-five game.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That, you know, when a guy is maybe a little more aggressive three-on-three – as Bufflin is in this instance trying to keep the puck in and going for the pinch, it doesn't really bother me because you're already playing in... I don't think you can criticize a guy for how he plays 3-on-3, you know, like you criticize a guy for how he plays 5-on-5. If you're playing 5-on-5 and you're Dustin Bufflin from 4 years ago, let's say, where you're roving and you're wild and crazy and you're unreliable, I think that's legitimate. If you're criticizing a guy for maybe being too aggressive 3-on-3, that's the part I don't really like, because 3-on-3 is such a gimmick. You might as well try and be a little more forceful in the play, and you might as well try and be a little more aggressive. You've already earned the 1 point. You're playing against you're not playing against a conference rival. You're playing against a team from the other conference. It's not really going to impact the playoff standings tremendously much. I'd rather he be more aggressive in that instance and try and win the game than be passive and you know, be hesitant, because that's not his style. And again, I differentiate between your activities 3-on-3 and your activities 5-on-5.
Yeah, it's a good point, but it goes back to what I was saying before as well. I mean, you're talking about the fifth game of a 6-game road trip. The previous night against Philly, he played 27 minutes. Previous night against New Jersey, he played 28 minutes. He was up to almost 31 minutes in that game. I mean, to me, Buff looked tired. And that's to be expected, Dave, when you play that much. I mean, maybe it's just me, but, you know, like, Buff is a very good hockey player. I mean, the fact that most players can't play that much. Most defensemen cannot play 27 or 28 minutes a game. And again, I'm not saying that he's not effective. I just think he'd be more effective if he was playing 4 or 5 minutes less per game.
Well, I think,
and I don't think I'm the only one that thinks like that. By the way,
I don't think you are either. I mean, I think it's ironic a little bit, Dave, and I'll let you, because I want to hear from you on this one. That, you know, we're having this topic right now. You know, does Dustin Bufflin get unfairly criticized? Because from my perspective, if you look at it at an all-around basis, his defensive play and his offensive play and his physicality, I would argue that this has been Dustin Bufflin's most steady year as a Jets defenseman, where he's the most reliable he's been as a member of the Jets is this season, in that he's not giving it up that much on the back end, and he's still contributing offensively, maybe not as much as he has previously, but that's because his shooting percentage is just way lower than what it should be.
It's a good question, and I'm with Ez in the sense that I'm not sure if Scott's referring to the Twitterverse.
I think he is.
Or if he's referring to something else.
I don't think we should ever refer to the Twitterverse. Not exactly, you know, a rational group of people.
No, I look, it's people get vocal and they're passionate, and I think you touched on it, Ez. They're fanatics, and that's what being a fan is all about, and you get excited about plays. But, I mean, again, I'm with Drew on this one, and Ez, to the point that I don't think this is a year that you're really criticizing Dustin Bufflin for his play. I think he's been extremely effective, and I think that he's been extremely smart with the decision making for the, you know, I mean, again, I'm with you, Drew. I mean, it's you're playing with house money at that point. You go for the win. That's fine. I mean, you can't put it all on Bufflin. I mean, the fact of the matter is, generally, you know, you think that, like, if you see that he's making that play, you anticipate maybe Blake Wheeler covers for him a little bit. So the reality is, I'm just saying, like, it's not all on him. And the fact is, we're isolating one play that the guy made versus, as he just talked about, the totality of what he's been able to do when you're missing a player like Jacob Trouba. Like, to me, it just seems somewhat unexpected based on how effective he's been this year for the Jets. So I'm not entirely sure where it's coming from. And again, the truth is, I mean, I pay attention to the Jets as much as anyone, I would think. And I'm not really seeing a lot of criticism of Dustin Bufflin's game. And I pay attention to what fans say a lot. And to be honest with you, I'm not seeing a tremendous amount of criticism. Now, are guys going to have their vocal critics? Yeah, there's segments of the fan base that hate player X. There's a segment of the fan base that hate, that love player Y. The fact is, you're always going to have this group of people who will dislike a person, regardless of whether it's based in reality, or they'll love this person. Again, sometimes it's not necessarily based in reality, but that's just such is life. And I just don't know that, you know, to Eddie's point, you can just listen
to Eddie.
We're going to replace Eddie's doing a great job on today's show, I got to say.
I don't know about that, but that Eddie guy makes some very valid points.
Does Barack Obama follow Eddie on Twitter?
No,
as well?
he does follow Ezzy, and we're talking about not a fake Barack Obama, the real.
That's something we found out just prior to the show today, is that Barack Obama, the president,
44th
former
president
of the United States, follows Ezzy on Twitter.
Okay, so that is true.
Yes.
And I didn't know that until earlier this week when I accidentally...
When he slid into your DMs?
Well, no, someone had retweeted something that Barack Obama had retweeted. And so, you know, when you hover over the name, you can see that they follow you. And I was like, this must be a mistake. This isn't the real Barack Obama. The real Barack Obama does follow me on Twitter. We should also mention he follows 600,000 people.
Yeah, but the fact that you're one of the 600, like, I assume that the other people he follows are like Nobel Prize winning, physicists.
I suspect.
And, the greats of society, the Illuminati. Is he part of the Illuminati?
I suspect.
I'm definitely a great of society.
I suspect, if I had to put my finger on it, that Barack Obama is angling himself for a 2018 or 2019 Ezzy Award. And so he's follow Ezzy's, and he's hoping. But for the record, Ezzy doesn't follow him back.
You don't follow him back.
It's a one.
So the former president of the United States follows you, but you don't determine. You didn't determine that deserves a follow back.
I might have to follow him now.
I would think so.
I don't think so. We got to keep Ezzy's ratio tight.
I don't want to screw it up. Maybe I'll follow him, and then he'll see that, and he'll unfollow me. He'll be like, why do I follow this guy?
I would hope he doesn't sit at home and stare at his Twitter. I mean, he's got time on his hands now, but I would hope he doesn't say, oh, damn, Ezzy followed me back now. I have to unfollow him. Anyways, that's your random Ezzy fact of the day. When we return, we're going to be joined by Scott Burnside. Talk about the Dallas Stars. They're in town tomorrow evening to play the Jets. They're desperate, fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot. Scott Burnside joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk in studio with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From DallasStars.com, he's a good friend of the program. We're pleased to welcome back Scott Burnside. Scott, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
I am, anytime. Always happy, and just got into Winnipeg in the early morning hours, so I haven't ventured outside yet, but looking forward to... How cold is it out there? That's the question I have for you this morning.
not too terrible. I mean, colder than you're used to, but it's nice and sunny, and you can actually feel warmth coming off the sun. So that's always a good sign that spring is in the air. It's not like, mid-January where it's sunny but frigid. It's actually pretty nice out there, so I think you'll be okay strolling around Winnipeg this afternoon.
Drew, give Scott the extended Perfect. Forecast.
I don't think he's staying for an extended period of time. But if you need that, Scott, my meteorology skills are always available. You obviously flew in from Ottawa last night, where the Dallas Stars dropped a 3-2 overtime defeat at the hands of the Senators. Stars, scratching and clawing here in the playoff race, 3-3-4 only in their last 10. Not an ideal time to have a bit of a swoon for this Dallas Stars team. What's been ailing the club, I'd say, on this road trip? They also lost the game earlier in Montreal.
Yeah, no, this is it is a pivotal time for the Dallas Stars. They're in the midst of a six-game road trip, as you point out. They're 0-2-2, and it's been, I think this has been a real test. It's been interesting to listen to Ken Hitchcock, the head coach, talk about sort of where the team is at, and really the test that this road trip means or it illustrates for this squad. And I think he's got a good perspective on it. You have to go back to the beginning of the year, and even though there were lots of high expectations after the off season of changes, there's a lot of work to do, right? I mean, a year ago they missed the playoffs by a country mile. They were one of the worst defensive teams in the NHL, and they've come a long way. They are a harder team to play against. They have, you know, built themselves a position where they are, in spite of a bit of a swoon, you know, still own the second wild card spot. They're tied with Colorado in terms of points with 84. Anaheim outside the playoff bubble technically also at 84 points. So pretty tight. And I think what Ken Hitchcock has seen in this team is that there are lots of players who've never been in a playoff race like this. Even though, you know, they may not be the youngest in terms of age, there isn't a ton of NHL experience and not a lot of sort of playoff type experience in that lineup. You take Martin Hanzel out, he's done for the season with the he underwent back surgery a couple weeks ago. So you take a veteran player like that out. Mark Messier's been in and out of the lineup. He's hoping to come back Sunday night against Winnipeg. Suffered a pretty gruesome cut when he blocked a shot in the game against Montreal. So you take his presence out of the lineup, and I think what you've seen is a team that is struggling with the pressure. You know, they had a 4-2 lead and a 5-4 lead against Toronto on Wednesday night, ended up losing in shootout, had a lead going into the third period against Ottawa last night, ended up having to score late to tie, to send it to overtime, and ended up losing on a Mike Hoffman goal in overtime. So I think what you're seeing is a team that really is learning on the fly how to win at the most critical times of the season. Now, whether they can, you know, they have two games left on this road trip. I think it's fairly critical that they get points both against Winnipeg and against Washington in closing out the road trip on Tuesday. This is learning. This is hockey 101 for the Dallas Stars, and learning to win at the most critical time of the season. And you know, it hasn't been all roses, but you know, I think Ken Hitchcock has basically said to the players, listen, this is, hey, you know, teams would kill to be in a position where you control your own destiny. If you, you know, if you get some points, you get some wins down the stretch, you're going to be in the playoffs. And so we'll see how they respond. You know, with they have now 10 games left in the regular season. We'll see how they respond to that.
Scott, Ben Bishop was in net for the Stars last night against the Ottawa Senators. He's back after that injury, and you know, he's obviously had a great year for the Stars this year. And you just mentioned there's 10 games left in the season. I guess a two-part question. How would you assess Ben Bishop's year for the Dallas Stars, his first year as the number one goaltender? And do you expect him to play 9 or maybe all 10 games here for the Stars down the stretch?
Yeah, no, I think it's been an interesting year for Ben Bishop. I think it probably took longer for Ben Bishop to find that real comfort zone. And maybe it shouldn't be that big a surprise. He spent as long as he did in Tampa. He's a goaltender who plays the puck as well as anyone in the NHL. I would put him up with Mike Smith as the top puck-moving goaltenders. And there was a period of adjustment, and probably took longer than people thought. But before his injury, Dan Hamm was fell on him, and so he had a left knee injury that kept him out for 5 straight starts. And before that, though, I thought he'd really settled into a nice groove. I thought he played pretty well last night. Really can't fault him on the 3 goals in the overtime loss. And I know he said he felt rusty to start with and then better as the game went along. But, you know, it's a Dallas team that didn't have a shot on goal until the 16-minute mark of the third period. So he was a little bit busier in the third period than he probably would have liked to. So I think to your question as to, you know, how Ken Hitchcock uses him, I guess we'll see how the knee holds up. He came back a little bit more quickly, I think, than some people thought he might in playing last night. My guess of the 10 games, he would probably play, you know, 8 or 9 as long as his health holds up. But, you know, Kari Lehtinen's been very good. He had a tough night in Toronto in the 6-5 shootout loss. So that was a bit of a rough outing for Kari Lehtinen, but he was playing back to backs. He's been very, very good for the Dallas Stars this year, and often playing in less than desirable circumstances, back to backs and on the road. And, you know, Kari Lehtinen's had a pretty terrific year for him, and he's in a contract year, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what Dallas does moving forward. Certainly they don't want to be paying, you know, the $11 or $12 million they're paying goaltenders this year. But I think Kari Lehtinen has played well enough that if it's not Dallas, someone is definitely going to be knocking on his door in the off season. He's been that solid, and he's very well liked in that room. So I don't, even if, you know, if Ben Bishop couldn't go, or if there were, you know, there were a couple of back-to-backs yet on the schedule, that it's not really a confidence issue if Kari Lehtinen plays. Really, the bigger issue, I think, has been the depth scoring for the Stars and avoiding costly penalties and just the sort of, you know, those key details that can come up and bite you. But they've struggled to score. They've struggled to score 5-on-5, and they struggle with depth scoring. So I think that's probably the bigger issue down the stretch as opposed to the goaltending, which has been pretty good all year, regardless of whether it's been Ben Bishop or Kari Lehtinen.
You know, Scott, that leads into my question perfectly, because what I wanted to know about was Jason Spezza. I mean, he's two seasons removed from scoring 33 goals for the Dallas Stars. This year, he's just has 7. What do you account for his drop-off this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's been very difficult for Jason Spezza. It was earlier in the season, he was a healthy scratch. It was the first time since his rookie year in Ottawa. And Ken Hitchcock has moved him around. He's played both both wings, actually. He's a natural center, of course. So he has played lots of center, but he's also been on the wings. He's played up and down the lineup. A couple weeks ago, he was playing with Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, and then he sometimes ends up on the fourth line. So it... the way Ken Hitchcock wants his team to play is a hard way to play. And especially for centers, it's a lot of work. You have to cover a lot of ground. I think the speed of the game it's been difficult for Jason Spezza. I think it's been difficult for him to find a place in Ken Hitchcock's lineup where he can thrive. He still has terrific hands. He still spent some time on the power play unit, more often on the second power play unit than the first power play unit, but he's still got great hands, got a great shot. But it's just been hard for him. It's been a real difficult go for him. And I know it's been difficult for Ken Hitchcock trying to find a place where he can maximize Jason Spezza's skill set. And it just hasn't happened. And there are four or five guys in the lineup this year whose productivity has dropped off. Brett Ritchie, who didn't play last night, it's been a struggle for him to, you know, I think at the beginning of the season you were looking at 15 to 20 goals for him. It hasn't happened that way. Devin Shore, who's played much better of late, is also a guy that has played top 6 minutes, and it's been a struggle for him. Matthias Janmark is in a bit of an offensive drought as well. Again, a guy who plays mostly in the top 6. So Jason Spezza is not alone in being a player that, you know, I think the expectations, certainly I know he expects more of himself and would like to contribute more, but it just hasn't worked out that way this season. It's been, you know, it's been hard for him, and I think it's a function of such a cliche, but it truly is such a speed game now in the NHL, and that's been difficult for Jason Spezza this season.
Scott Burnside is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott covers the Dallas Stars for DallasStars.com. Scott, you look at the Stars, and they're certainly one of the most top-heavy teams in the entire NHL. You know, Sagan, Ben, Radulov, you know, John Klingberg on the back end. They're the offensive catalysts for this team. You know, as we sit here, and, you know, not coincidentally, all four of those players have all played all 72 games this season. Do you see signs of fatigue from those four guys, given how they've had to log all the heaviest minutes and been relied on so heavily by the Stars for the entirety of the season?
Yeah, I think so. It's funny. I asked Jamie Benn this last night after the game, because they did look like a team, especially, you know, so from the midpoint of the game last night right through until Tyler Pitlick tied it with less than 2 minutes to go in regulation. But they looked like a team that was leaking energy. And, it's a function of the road trip. It's a function of being at game 72. Tyler Pitlick said, you know, listen, everyone's tired. Everyone's tired in the NHL at this point of the season. But I think your point's a good one. When you have had a pretty big gap between your top-end offensive producers and the rest of your lineup, it does put a lot of pressure on those big guns. And it's been interesting to watch Ken Hitchcock and how he has used, you know, the big three up front, Sagan, Ben, and Radulov, and of course John Klingberg, who can, you know, has been a terrific season for him, a real breakout sort of renaissance season for him. He's been much better on the defensive side of the puck while continuing to lead all NHL defensemen in points. you know, Kent Hitchcock has gone through periods where he's had Radulov, Ben, and Sagan play together for long stretches. You know, they played together last night. But in order to sort of coax more offense out of his lineup, he's also broken them up, and he's used Jamie Benn on the left side. He's used Jamie Benn down the middle. So there's been a constant sort of rotation of the use of those big guns to try and not just maximize their production, but to try and get other players going as well. So it'll be interesting to see. I know against bigger, deeper Western Conference teams like the Winnipeg Jets, that he sometimes likes to break them up because it makes it harder for opposing coaches to match up. So it'll be interesting to see. It wouldn't surprise me if he breaks up the big line tomorrow night. But it is, you know, it's been hard. The pressure on those four players is enormous, especially when there hasn't been a lot of depth scoring, and especially with the points as you know, at a premium now. This is a team that, you know, it'll be a huge disappointment if they don't make the playoffs. And so there's an enormous amount of pressure on those leaders, that leadership group in the Dallas dressing room, to push forward through these last 10 games and to find a spot in the top eight in the Western Conference.
You know, Scott, you mentioned John Klingberg there in your answer, and I wanted to ask you about John Klingberg. You know, you mentioned he has more points than any other defenseman in the NHL. He's tied his career high in points with 58. He's obviously going to shatter that and be closer to somewhere around 65 to 70 points. Does that talk ever creep in Dallas that he has the opportunity to be the first ever Dallas Stars defenseman to win the Norris Trophy? And how much does he remind you of a pretty good defenseman that they used to have, number 56, Sergei Zubov?
Yeah, it's been an interesting year for John Klingberg for that very reason. You know, he's a very bright young man, and he is very, you know, he's very self-aware. So I think he understands that his game isn't, you know, sort of fully formed yet, but it's been, certainly the Norris discussion, you know, I was in Tampa at All-Star Weekend, and that was really, you know, sort of his first prolonged exposure to national media, and a lot of questions about where he fit into the Norris Trophy race. And, you know, with Mark Methot being out of the lineup for as long as he has at various points in the season, John Klingberg is doing a little bit more. He's killing more penalties. It's something that he doesn't do a lot of. And I think he and I have talked about this, and that, you know, the true Norris defenseman, I think, and it has to be a defenseman who is counted on in all situations, and can go over the boards regardless of the score, regardless of the time of the game, and be counted on to be an elite presence. And I'm sure he's going to garner some attention from the Norris voters. I know that it's often, you know, the points weigh heavily in that. I think, frankly, it's been probably too heavy in my estimation over the years. Easy for me to say now. I don't vote this year, but as a former president of the PHWA, I think sometimes we've missed the boat on, you know, what constitutes the best defenseman in the NHL. And to me, it's got to be a very fully formed game. But I do know John Klingberg's worked really hard. He's worked hard with Ken Hitchcock and Rick Wilson, who's the defensive specialist coach on the staff. They simplified his game. He makes far fewer mistakes. You know, he's less of a riverboat gambler, which I think was, you know, a lot of high-end young defensemen. That's their, you know, that's their calling card when they first come in the NHL, and they use their skill or rely on it as opposed to, you know, maybe understanding that it's just, there's times to make a simpler play. There's times to back off. There's times to not be, you know, rushing with the puck and all those kinds of things. And I think John Klingberg has done a lot this season to you see the maturity in his game, where he is a player now that's counted on to play against the opposing team's top units. He does kill some penalties now, and he's still a vital part of the offense in the power play. I mean, the first power play unit, there often he'll play, you know, a minute and a half out of a 2-minute minor penalty again, you know, when the Stars are on the power play. So I think you've seen a big evolution there. You know, I'm fascinated to see where he ends up in terms of the Norris Trophy voting, especially, obviously, it'll be, I think his chances go up that he'll be in the top five if the Stars make the playoffs. I think it's always harder to put a Norris guy in if his team doesn't make the playoffs. That's always been my voting sort of, you know, plan. But it's definitely been a big season for John Klingberg in terms of the evolution of his game. And I think this Norris talk is really just beginning for him.
Scott Burnside covers the Dallas Stars for DallasStars.com. Scott, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this morning. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow evening.
All right, look forward to it.
Take care, Scott. Thanks again. When we come back, we look at the Eastern and Western Conference playoff races and yet another epic Glenn Gullitson rant. We'll play that for you, including all the bleeps. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Time for a look at the playoff races. Before we do that, of course, this segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Drew, what's going on with my mic here?
I don't know.
About to fall off or what?
Is it lowering on you?
It's not staying steady.
It keeps I see it now.
Yeah. Your hydraulics aren't working there.
Yeah.
I don't know, tighten it up here or something. Yeah, I'm not your maintenance guy.
Well, we should get right here. I'll hold it.
Dave's just going to hold Ezzy's mic up. So, you know, we'll be okay. I think you'll survive the segment. We'll get it fixed for the next segment. How about that? Anyways, as I was saying, Bernstein's Deli, if you're looking for a place to catch all the games, they got the 5 big screen TVs. They got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. For more information, bernsteinsdeli.com. It's looking more and more likely that there's only going to be 2 Canadian teams in the playoffs this season.
I think Vancouver's still got a chance.
That, of course, being the Jets and the Leafs. The Calgary Flames were in a playoff spot for a bulk of the season. Their season has spiraled into a tailspin, and that left head coach Glenn Gullitson not very happy earlier this week at practice after the Flames had laid an egg at home against the New York Islanders. Here's what Mr. Gullitson had to say to his team.
For us, is listen, you guys won't play. You guys all play. The key is, I'm not saying don't make the play. I'm not saying that. But you're into make the play. You're by yourself, Ralph, you're by yourself, you know, 3-2 here. He throws it in. Stewie, he's 2-on-2, he chips it in. It's knowing when to make the play. That's the challenge. That's the challenge. That makes a difference between who's the great players, who are the good players, who are the grind players, which players stay in the league, which players keep going. Who knows who distinguishes the best and what the situation calls for. Right? I'm all right if we're on a 3-on-2 and we maybe off, the guy takes it out of the area. And it's a full-fledged 3-on-2. I'm not okay if we're late at the end of the ship, we're pulling up a blue, throwing something blind, and we're okay. You're coming over the line here, Benny, and I've seen this before. One time there, and you're slowing up to make a play, and then you take a risk. You can't slow up. Drive it, shoot it off the end wall, go again. Go for it, guys. No one the plays there. We're here early. You get stuffed up at the line. Go just backhand it blind in the slot. Throw it down. Play's over. Cut your losses. Best players are the best gamblers. They know when to double down. They know when to hold. Let's go again here.
Anybody count the number of bleeps you heard there? There were a lot. I think about 16, 17 bleeps in about a minute and a half there.
To make an appointment...
22. Rory's telling me 22 bleeps in the span of 90 seconds there.
To make an appointment to get your practices to ting.
With Glenn Gullitson. No, I mean, that was... First of all, kudos to the guy who puts in that little beep. That was a good beep.
That was a quality beep.
There's different beep choices you could have made.
Ting. Yeah.
That was a ting.
Yeah, that was rather London Market Dental Center ting right there. You know, the Flames are, I mean, they're currently, you know, 4 points out of a playoff spot, both for a wild card spot and for the Pacific Division in third place. It's highly unlikely they're going to make the playoffs. How disappointing of a season is this in Calgary?
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's a little bit aggressive.
I wouldn't say that just yet. I mean, they're 4 points behind the Anaheim Ducks right now.
Yeah, the Ducks.
Don't get me wrong.
Or the Kings, actually.
And 4 points behind.
Right. The Ducks are, yeah, you're right.
Four points behind the Ducks and Kings.
Okay.
Because the Kings have the last wild card spot, right?
Yeah.
No, right now the Kings are in third of the Pacific.
Yeah, Kings are third
Dallas
in the Pacific.
And
Dallas
and
Colorado
are
the
wild
card spot.
So they're,
but
they're,
all those teams
every,
are tied.
Everybody has 84 points.
They're,
yeah.
they're 4 points out of the playoff spot.
Yes. Yeah.
Whoever's in the last wild card spot right now, they're 4 points behind that team. So I wouldn't say it's over yet, but they got to turn this around. And they've got a huge game in Vegas tomorrow night.
Well,
I mean, that's a must-win game. And by the way, Vegas is struggling too. So Vegas wants that win. I mean, let's be honest. Vegas has the Pacific locked up.
Yeah.
They've won the Pacific. But that's not going to be an easy game. We know how good Vegas is at home. They basically win every single game. They've only lost 9 games all year in regulation. But, I mean, Glenn Gulletson, I mean, you can understand his frustration. I mean, this Calgary Flames team has so much talent. We know who Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, Mark Giordano is a great defenseman. Dougie Hamilton. I mean, this is a really good team. They brought in Mike Smith to shore up the goaltending. But, I mean, They have not had a good second half of the season here.
They lost 7-4 last night to the Sharks. Evander Kane with a 4-goal game, his first hat trick. Never mind 4-goal game, but his first hat trick and 4-goal game in his NHL career for the Sharks.
Good for number 9.
Yeah, there you go.
It's nice to see that, honestly.
It's amazing. I mean, this Flames team, if you recall correctly, they had won 7 games in a row, and then the player break hit. And then they came off the player break, and that's when the Jets beat them in a shootout, if I recall correctly. It was a Saturday afternoon game. It was Hockey Day in Canada. The Jets beat them in a shootout. Since then, they're 10-10-6. So they've, you know, lost. They've only won 10 of their last 26 games. I mean, that player break killed all the momentum for the Calgary Flames, and it's shown
yeah,
since then.
That's a good point. And, you know, for me, they've been pretty inconsistent all year long. And for me, I mean, this team scores goals. There's a few things that's really surprising to me. It's they've been awful at home.
Yeah.
They're below 500 at home.
Well, it's because they need a new arena, so they can't play well in the old arena.
Well, I don't want to get into that. But in addition to that, it's the way they've played defensively that really surprises me. Because
on
as far as I'm concerned, you know, that top four, top six for Calgary is right up there with the best of the best. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Nashville, you know, is still a cut above the rest of the NHL. Tampa Bay is up there. But when you're talking about, you know, we talked about it, Giordano, Dougie Hamilton, TJ Brody, Travis Hamonic. I mean, it's a good group of defensemen. And, you know, Mike Smith has had, you know, his struggles as of late, but the whole team has struggled. But, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on this team. I mean, this team had aspirations of going far in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And as you mentioned right now, you know, they're 4 points out of it, and it's not looking good. But I wouldn't count them out just yet. I mean, let's wait here. Lots of hockey to be played here. And starting tomorrow night, for me, that's a must-win game for the Flames in Vegas.
Yeah, I think, an afternoon game in Vegas tomorrow. But the Flames absolutely need to turn this thing around, starting immediately. Not off to a good start on the road trip, of course, losing last night in San Jose. But they get an opportunity for redemption against the Vegas Golden Knights tomorrow afternoon. When we come back, we're going to be joined by John Lane. He's a writer for NHL.com. Look around the NHL with John. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.